Welcome to the 121st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. Welcome. In case you're just new to the podcast, I'm a plant-based cardiologist, and I live in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete doing marathons and Ironman races. Currently, I'm training for Chattanooga Ironman, so that's in late September. So trying to get the run, the swim, and the bike ramped up, and it's hot in Florida and humid, so there's getting used to the humidity, and now we're getting some rain, so learning to train between the raindrops as well. But all is well. Things are going and moving right along. I'm delayed on last week's podcast, so I'm almost a week out. I was up in Atlanta lecturing at the Humane Society Food Forward event at Georgia State. It was a great event. I was happy to be invited. Thank you. Shout out to Rebecca Portman, who is in charge of the event up at Georgia State. Also got to meet some other friends from the Humane Society. Ken Botts, who is a director of the food service, and Carla Dumas, who's a registered dietitian with the Humane Society. And it was a great event. There was these events showcase what's new in the plant-based world, what's new in the world of sustainability, and this was quite interesting. Georgia State is doing a lot of projects. They had Ken Botts in to do education for their food service program, and they've developed some vegan options for the cafeterias in all of their food service places, as well as their catering has vegan options, and their chef gave us a demonstration. They also are participating in project that's called freight farming, and that is you can go freightfarm.com and see a reference to this, but basically their freight cars turned into hydroponic growing centers. So Georgia State grows most of their lettuce and greens in this hydroponic freight farm that sits outside of one of their buildings, so that was pretty interesting. You know, it's there's a $3 sustainability charge to every student per year that goes into the support this. But you know, they have fresh organic greens, so that's a pretty cool event. You know, they're also developing a lot of plant-based options in their different cafeterias. So that's really fun to see. Ken Botts gave his lecture on the universities. The Humane Society goes in and educates the food service and chefs at various universities, and they get various venues, whether it be a station that's vegan, or even sometimes, as Ken started at University of Texas, University of North Texas, a whole cafeteria that was dedicated, or whole cantina that was dedicated to vegan options. And this is spreading like wildfires to Harvard. He's out at Missoula, Montana now, educating their food service people. So it's growing, you know, quite fast, and it's nice to see, because if, you know, they've demonstrated when you give college kids the option to eat healthy, they do. And you know, when you educate them that this food tastes good and it's good for them, it works. And you know, there's plenty of studies showing that, you know, when you eat healthy, your brain works better. There's more nutrition, and obviously, you know, your mental awareness is better, your energy is better, so it's a great environment for learning. And so it's nice for them to get in on this campuses at these colleges to help educate the food service people there. So that was very interesting. I also got to hear from the mayor's office in Atlanta, and they have a program called Egglanta, where they are cultivating food forests in city parks. They're helping with sustainability and farm efforts, and they're helping with you know, growing some raised bed in local parks. So it's all exciting. And, you know, Atlanta seems to be on the forefront of really being green and trying to introduce more plant-based nutrition based on the environmental aspects and sustainability, because we know that animal agriculture is responsible for a large portion of the greenhouse gases. So Atlanta is trying to address their air policy and their environmental policies through plant-based nutrition, which is fabulous. We also heard from Matt Rogers, and Matt Rogers is the resident district manager and sustainability steward of Aramark. He works with North Carolina Food Bank, and also works with it's called Feast Down East, where they in North Carolina try to promote small farmers and do and help them to get their food out, and also help feed people with the small farmers' crops to the food banks. So it was very, very interesting what they were doing up there. So it was nice to connect with these people and hear what they had to say. Everybody was very, very positive. It's always a positive day. There were people there from the Humane Society in various divisions, as well as Georgia State and University of Georgia, and registered dietitians, as well as food service people and different educators. So it was nice to have everybody in the room together to, you know, see what was going on with in the different realms. I presented on my plant-based nutrition class and how it's made an impact in my practice and on my patients. And so that I differed a little bit on the approach than the Humane Society. And I really like the Humane Society and what they're doing with their Food Forward event. It's a very positive movement. They create healthy, sustainable menu options. They're wonderful in teaching and partnering with different institutions. They're a softer approach than I am for some different reasons. They're trying, you know, obviously they're very much interested in a Meatless Monday or a Food Forward Day, and to promote maybe 20% more plant-based meals in people's lives, you know, and I guess they're the small stepper approaches, you know, and every little bit helps. The more they go and educate people, the more that the word spreads, and it's a great thing. And, you know, it was nice to see, you know, the people in the room. Most of the people in the room at least had their toe in the water as far as being vegetarians. There were a fair amount of vegans, but it varied quite a bit, you know. And, of course, it varied with regard to, you know, it was more of being plant-based for the environment than plant-based for health's sake for the most part. So, you know, if you take that approach, then you have, I guess, times on your side. So if you start cutting out meat and dairy and animal products from your, you know, a little bit at a time, we're making a huge impact when it comes to, you know, animal agriculture. I guess, you know, that my, you know, when I, from my perspective, I see that 20% as helping animals and helping health and helping the environment, you know, 20%. And 80% of the time we're still promoting, you know, or not promoting, but 80% of the time that leaves for people to eat poorly and not help the animals, their health or the environment. You have to start somewhere. And I think that, you know, Humane Society is doing a great place to start somewhere. But from a health aspect, it's not enough. It's not going to turn disease around. And that was kind of my talk. It's, you know, adding a few more vegetables doesn't cut it when you're still doing all those bad things with, you know, the oils and the processed foods, because, you know, basically the you're introducing so many free radicals and so much oxidation into your diet that, you're not going to get very far as far as reversing disease. You may help yourself sustain your current state of health, but if you're in the state where my patients are in, it's not enough to make an impact. It's kind of like when patients come into the office and they say they don't eat anything and they're not losing weight. And I ask them what they had the night before, and they say, maybe they say they didn't even eat dinner the night before. And then I'll say, well, what did you have in the afternoon if you didn't eat dinner the night before? And then there's usually a big meal in there. Or they said, you know, they were bad. Or perhaps perhaps they were studying for their appointment and decided that, you know, they weren't going to eat dinner the night before. And so they had, you know, been really good that day. But yet they weren't losing any weight. And so when we start to explore, you know, the week before their appointment or the month before, we start to talk about how many times they've gone out to dinner or how many times they've had takeout or box foods. And then all of a sudden, we start to see all these things that, you know, are not good for you start to rear their ugly heads. So what happens is, and what I tried to explain it, if you have, you know, say you only have cheese pizza once a month, and you only have a pork sandwich once a month, and you only have a steak once a month, and you only have a Big Mac once a month, and you can see, you know, you only go out for whatever once a month, and you get into chips, you know, only on the weekends. You can see that if you're good one day but bad 4 days, or bad, you know, one day or 2 days a week or 3 days a week, or bad with something different multiple days of the week, where you don't get anywhere, because that little bit of good is negated by all the poor health choices that you make. And it's really hard to envision what 20% of your diet is, you know, versus 80% of your diet. I think most of us would, you know, we see the 80% as being good as opposed to the 20% being good. And it probably is closer to the 20% when people are trying. And so that, you know, so if we just go for 20%, I think we're really missing the mark, you know, because there's so much room for error in that. And it becomes a matter of perception. And then, you know, it's dialed back, and there's really, you know, no rules about it. And there's really no scorecard. It's, you know, no one can keep score that, okay, 20% of the time I'm gonna, you know, eat well. Now, if you're plant-based one day a week, and, you know, then you kind of have score, you know, you kind of have a score that. I also think that there's a way when you look at a meatless Monday, there is somewhat of a perception that you're giving up something. So I think it's very important. And you know, again, the Humane Society presents this in a very, very positive way. So I'm not taking anything about them, but about their programs. But if you, as you know, an individual, decide that you're going to do, you know, one day a week or before 6 o'clock, and you're giving up something, you're sort of labeling that as punishing yourself, that you're giving up something on those days, and then your reward are the other days when you get the things that you normally have. And I think that's a bad way to look at becoming plant-based, because the reality of it is you're getting so much more when you become plant-based. So that at the time that you're plant-based, you're getting your health, you're helping the animals, you're helping the environment, you're turning back the clock as far as your aging. So I think that needs to be appreciated, as opposed to, you know, okay, I'm going to suffer through this one day, and then I can do what I want the rest of the days. So I think we have to be very careful, and we put that in perspective, that it's not really giving up that day is, okay, we're going to be healthy one day of the week. And if you choose it that way, then with the idea is, okay, I'm healthy one day of the week, and now I'm going to be healthy before 6, and then I'm going to be healthy, you know, 4 days out of the week. And then my goal is, you know, on such and such a date that it's going to be 7 days, then I think you're better off, because you have a game plan, as opposed to, you know, this is only, you know, I'm giving this up one day. the other thing is that I think you have to be really careful with the slippery slope of the so-called cheat day, because that cheat day, you know, tends to get out of hand. And again, it negates everything you've done for the week. You know, you load yourself up with all this poison and antioxidants, and it can really, you know, stifle your weight loss. It can stifle, you know, you're adding all these inflammatory components back. So I really don't think that that's a good way for, you know, to do it, especially in the long run. You know, you have to put a time limit on that, because that cheat day starts to bleed over into the other days. And, you know, or you exchange it for another day. I once heard some people in the cath lab that was doing Weight Watchers, and Weight Watchers is a point system for the most part. And they were actually saving their points up because they were planning on going out for this big breakfast with pancakes and bacon and all this other kind of stuff. So they were saying, okay, we're going to use our points for this. And that's really not the way to health, is to save up so that you can eat really poorly. Because again, it's cumulative of what you're doing with your body. You know, when you introduce these, you know, this oxidation, these free radicals and these chemicals into your body, it's not like they just go away in 10 or 15 minutes. You know, you've dialed the clock back on your health. You've possibly initiated DNA damage and, you know, plaque formation and so forth, so that you're really going backwards instead of forwards. The Humane Society staff has such a job on their hands when it comes to training kitchen staff in these big institutions. They've written a very nice book on how to cook vegan for in volumes, and they use, because they want to obviously make a profit on these food service cafeterias and restaurants within the university, you know, they need to contain cost. And so by containing cost, it actually, they're better off using, staying away from processed food. So there's a lot of beans and rice dishes and vegetable dishes, which is fantastic. So using simple ingredients is, you know, they've proven a way that they can actually prepare. I think the per plate cost was like $1.50. So, you know, that it was much cheaper than the standard per plate cost in the traditional dining rooms at these universities. So Ken has proven the point that, you know, eating plant-based is actually cheaper than eating a standard American diet. And, you know, I think it can be taken one step further, that as, you know, you educate in maybe round two, round three of educating these universities, it's now we got to take the oil and we got to take some of the fast food out of things. You know, we don't want the French fries anymore. There was just a study done and released that increasing eating French fries is, you know, associated with, you know, increased risk of cardiovascular events versus potatoes in general, obviously because of the oil. You know, so we want to get the oil out on the next go around. It's listening to the food services chef talk about, you know, how she prepared things. They even made a cranberry spread. She put oil in it. They did a kind of a mushroom barbecue sandwich. She put oil in it. There was just, you know, oil in a lot of places that it didn't need to be. They did a fried green tomato, which is a southern dish. You know, we do a version of fried green tomatoes, but we don't fry them. We just actually bake them with some panko breadcrumbs, and they're great. They're fantastic, and it's even good just to just a little bit of topping on a green tomato and just bake it in the oven. You get the same green tomato taste without the grease, and you know, nobody would believe it, but you know, it's true. You don't need to be frying these things, and we don't need to be putting grease and oil and everything. So that's kind of the next step for these cafeterias, is to start extracting the oil. And if they do, you know, I mean, it's going to be so much for, you know, if you get the oil out of your kitchen, it's so much cleaner. You know, your cabinets stay clean, your cleanup is easier. So it would be much better for their kitchen environments as well. It pains me to see the chefs that are, you know, overweight, because of, you know, all the food sampling they're doing and, you know, and, you know, all the oil and high calorie food that they're sampling. If they were cooking without oil and, you know, cooking more and more plant-based and adopting it themselves, as they are gradually, then, you know, their health would improve as well. So I think, you know, that needs to be the next step, is to start educating our chefs in these institutions on, you know, how to cook without oil and how to cook and how to get rid of the sugar, you know, all this tremendous amount of sugar that's put in everything. You know, and you know, they'll gradually change, you know, change the taste of the kids. You know, when it just kind of extracted little by little, nobody really ever notices it. But, you know, in summary, it just takes one person to change many. You know, Ken goes into universities with his staff and they change many. They educate the chefs, and the chefs, you know, put the food out for, you know, the students, and the students try vegetarian dishes and their friends try the vegetarian or the vegan dishes. And, you know, it's promoted, and, you know, it just grows exponentially. So my hat's off to the Humane Society, and my hat's off to any organization that just gathers. And, you know, if just one person hears it and the light bulb goes on, it can spread to many. So it's all good. You know, I want it to go quicker. I think, you know, I've certainly seen a lot of cardiovascular disease reversed and a lot of diabetes and high blood pressure reversed rather quickly. You know, rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis goes away really quick. Those symptoms settle right down. But I think, you know, when disease has become very progressive, especially in cancers, you know, I don't think there's any room to fool around. I think we have to be aggressive from the get-go, and we have to be aggressive starting at a young age to get people to eat healthy food that's not going to damage their DNA and set them up for these cancers, because it takes so many billions of cells before we have a tumor that's about 1 centimeter in diameter. So if you wait until this thing is a billion cells and the horse is out of the barn, it's a lot harder to stop things than if we can get things, you know, stopped and turned around and repair the DNA and repair this damage before it ever gets out of hand. So I think that's where we have to start being more aware that, you know, time is, you know, I talked to somebody today, you know, you can abuse your body without knowing it, or without knowing or noticing the damage that you're causing, probably for the first 35 to 40 years of your life. You know, you can eat just about anything. And most people, they don't see the harmful effects. People that have genetic setups for early cancers or early heart disease, those people aren't as lucky. That, you know, sometimes it manifests itself earlier. Of course, if they abuse themselves enough, it can manifest earlier. But for the most part, people can do moderate abuse for a lot of years. But after that time period, you know, it starts to add up, and you know, people start falling off the, you know, off the curb rather quickly. And I'm seeing more and more young people with cancer that's very, very aggressive. And it's cumulative. It's because of the food we eat. It's because of this exposure. And, you know, so I make a plea for you. If you look at something and it has a paragraph of chemicals involved in it, stay away from it. You know, I try to talk to my patients, you know, look and see how many antioxidants you can get into your diet a day. You know, if you have fruit at every meal, you know, you're adding a lot of antioxidants in, you know, and you take away the processed food, you're taking away a lot of free radical generation and a lot of damage. So try to, you know, focus on each meal to tip the scales or tip the, you know, towards more of taking in good things and eliminating the bad or processed things. So that's just kind of, you know, one way that, you know, I like to approach things. So part of my trip to Atlanta also involved helping my daughter and son-in-law move. And, you know, it's kind of that time of year where a lot of people are moving, changing apartments, changing jobs, getting new houses. And, you know, certainly that's a chore. And, you know, oftentimes when your kitchen's a mess or you're tired, your nutrition can also go down the tube. So, you know, or if you're in a strange town and environment, we love the Happy Cow app. We pulled that up, and we were really lucky to find a loving hut that was less than 6 miles from their new place, as well as a mellow mushroom. So we had, the loving hut has a lot of Asian type dishes. And so we had loving hut one evening. We had mellow mushroom pizza one evening, with pizza with tofu and all veggie and a whole wheat crust. So, that was a reasonable meal. There's the very little oil in the mellow mushroom crust. We went to a place and had burritos. We had the place made us great, rice and beans and spinach. And you could choose, you could put your own inside. So they had fresh veggies, choose three veggies with rice and beans. And it was really, really good. During the move day, we had hummus, and I made a sushi salad. So, if it was just, it went to, and just grabbed vegetables, grabbed a couple bowls of fruit from the grocery store. So you can just, it doesn't take much planning to, be able to cover things when you're in a bind like that. So look for a grocery store, look for, the Happy Cow app is again, wonderful to try to find, restaurants that have vegan, vegetarian options. Oh, the other thing that I didn't mention about the Food Forward event, they had Sarah Burney. She is the director of Wholesome Wave Georgia, and this was a very interesting program through the SNAP, where they double the SNAP dollars to buy, produce. So that, and they actually had medical prescriptions type of for fruit and vegetables. So poor families could actually double their money if they spent it on fruit and vegetables, which I thought was a fantastic program. And we obviously need to have more of that, because the more education that we have along those lines, the better it'll be. I want to turn my attention to a little pet peeve I have. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there's nothing more that'll turn me off on a podcast than to hear an advertisement for a supplement or a protein powder, just for the sake of making a little bit of money. There's just no place for these things in your diet. Meal replacement drinks. Come on now, let's have the meal. If you have a meal replacement drink, we know from Dr. Campbell's work that we cannot extract nutrients and put it with a powder and drink it and think we have food. It just doesn't happen. And you're missing out on all the fiber. And we really do need to, as Americans especially, approach that 70 gram of fiber a day. So if you do one meal replacement with a drink of whatever it is, I don't care how organic it is, you're not getting any fiber, and you're not going to be able to utilize those nutrients in that drink. So you're just fooling yourself. And the money that it costs, most of these things, are pretty expensive. You don't know how they're made. You don't know how they're extracted. There's no work on, the extraction process. Plus the cost. You can buy a lot of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, for the amount that you would do this meal replacement and get twice, more the amount of nutrients. So, stay away from these things that are attractive as far as, meal replacements or a vegetable powder or, some supplement that, promotes nitric oxide production, which has never been shown, or, has a bunch of antioxidants. It's not been shown to be helpful. We need to take these things in naturally. So don't fall for that. Save your money again for fruits and vegetables. And forget about the smoke and mirror of these snake oil type potions in the nutrition world today. In the front of my, or in my practice, I had a new patient this week that came to me because she became plant-based, and she went back to see her primary care doctor, and her doctor wouldn't stop her medications. And I'm getting more and more email along those lines. Physicians are just blown away at the fact that, you could actually cure diabetes or cure high blood pressure. And I guess there was a time when, you know, I saw a normal blood pressure and attributed it to the medication, but this particular patient had lost, you know, 38 pounds, and she was still on diabetic medication and cholesterol medications, and, you know, we just started reeling them back. You know, what a great way to have positive feedback for someone that is doing the right thing than to eliminate their medications. And, you know, we run the risk of side effects from these medications. Very low blood pressure means, you know, decreased perfusions of vital organs, dizziness, the potential to pass out. You know, and diabetic medications are very, very scary. You know, we're pounding the pancreas to put out more insulin, and we're pounding the liver not to make glucose. And we're, you know, running the risk of having really low sugars, which can affect, you know, your mentation. Again, you know, potential to pass out. So, you know, we need to back off on these medications as soon as someone's making, you know, changes. My approach to this is follow somebody closely. If, you know, they, you know, there's always a risk that, you know, because of the way, you know, other traditional diets are, that people think that if they lose 30, 40 pounds, they're cured, or they do a, you know, we'll go on to the next patient after this, that, you know, they can be cured and go back to their old ways. That's not how it works. This is a lifestyle. You're eating for health. And wellness, you know, you're targeting, again, you want to get in, you're getting in all these nutrients. You don't have to count them. You don't have to add up calories, but you do have to eliminate the bad things and the processed foods. And if you start putting those back, then, you know, the disease is going to just pop right back up. So this is something that, you know, has to be, you know, it's a forever type of thing. So if I see someone that's doing well, I'll follow back up with them. But if they start to slide and start to gain their weight back, then, you know, we have to put the medications back. And, you know, we have a frank discussion about, you know, is this really the way you want to go? You know, you've achieved, you've had good results. Why would you want to turn around? And it happens, you know, and that's why we stay close follow-up, so that, you know, I can help to encourage people. That's why I like our nutrition group, so that, you know, people have the opportunity to be in an environment where they have support. And if there is an issue, which it can happen, you know, we're all human, then you need help as far as you need to be protected to some degree, from the dangers of, you know, falling off the wagon for a little bit. So, but as long as people are doing well, then, you know, I want to get rid of these medications as quickly as possible. So we back off on those diabetic medications pretty quickly. I had another person inquire about allergies, and fasting. And, you know, we have a lot of good data that when people do water fasts, you know, the body is given time to rest and time to heal itself. And it really does. The inflammation will leave the body. And she's having tremendous success, you know, with breathing's markedly improved. But it doesn't make the susceptibility to, you know, to go back to eating the foods that may have caused a problem in the first place. So it doesn't cure you or make you invincible after it's over or after you stop. It's just like exercise. I used to think, you know, at what age can you actually stop exercising and kind of ride it out? You know, you've got yourself in good enough shape. You know, you can hang on to the muscle that you have and the fitness level that you have without having to work at it so hard. And the answer, unfortunately, is you can't. As soon as, you know, we know 3 days without exercise, you start to lose, you know, your cardiovascular conditioning. And before long, you know, it doesn't take too many more days that you start to lose mitochondria and your ability to metabolize in your muscles. And, you know, you start to get muscle shrinkage. And so you can't stop exercising. If you want to maintain where you are, and if you want to get better or bigger or stronger or faster, you have to keep the training up. You can't just stop. And it's the same way with nutrition. You can't get to a point where, okay, I'm healthy, so now I can go back to cheeseburgers and cheese pizzas, or throw it in once in a while. Because again, if you throw it in once in a while, then it becomes, you know, once a month, then once every 2 weeks, and every other day, and, you know, then this and that. So, you know, you have to kind of make up your mind that, you know, you're going to choose health and then to promote it. And if, you know, if you miss a day of exercise or you miss a day of good eating, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to be off the wagon forever, but it does mean that you really need to pay attention and to try to eliminate those, and certainly not set as a goal to have these off days and off the, you know, the nutrition weeks, so to speak. The hospitals that I work at continue to be terrible as far as patients' meals. Despite my efforts, you know, I'm not making much in the way of headway as far as having vegan options. You know, I had a cancer patient get Ensure scrambled eggs, coffee cake for breakfast, and whole milk because she needed to eat and needed the calories. It just breaks my heart. I talked to her family to try to bring her in, you know, and juice for her. But it's just, you know, when somebody's so sick, you'd like to kidnap them and take them out of the hospital if you could to, you know, try to help them heal. I think there's a time and a place for chemotherapy, but you really need to supplement that with good nutrition. And you know, continuing to eat poorly is not going to help the process. So it really drives me insane when I have to go in and look at that. It really makes me feel bad too, because I think the patient's being done a disservice. So there's a lot of room for change there, and a lot of work that needs to be done. My class is, we're class 5 this week. So we have one more class before we do dessert night. We do healthy desserts that night, but tomorrow night we're having a what I like to call as cabbage unrolled. Growing up, we had cabbage rolls that traditionally you would have hamburger and rice and tomatoes and rolled up steamed cabbage leaves. So we do it cabbage unrolled. We do beans and rice and a grain. Tomorrow night I'm using barley, and then I just chop the cabbage up and use tomatoes. Some garlic, a little bit of hot pepper for spice, and some sauerkraut as a fermented vegetable in there. It makes a nice casserole. I make it in a wok. It's really quick. I make the grains beforehand, but everything else, you know, I'll make right there. So that's a great great meal for class. It's a great quick meal. It takes about 30 minutes. So, you know, if you have an Instapot, you can make your grain in there and then do the rest in a wok. It's not very much cleanup. It's a good meal. You get your greens. So we're going to have cabbage. You get your whole grain. We're going to have barley. You get your tomatoes. You get your fermented food, again, the sauerkraut. So, and you get your beans, which are the superfood of all populations that live long. So that's kind of what we try to do with each of the meals we have in my nutrition class, is introduce a grain, introduce a green, introduce a different bean every time, so that people can get an idea of what they like. Because different people like different things, and you know, I encourage people to, you know, kind of find their, you know, their 6 or 8 go-to meals that they like, that they can make quickly and they can rely on. And so that tends to be helpful for them. As far as my garden goes, we're starting to get rain in Florida, so things are starting to green back up. Sweet potatoes grow so easy in Florida and jicama, so those are really going good. I actually had some garlic pop-ups this week, so that's great. My beans and cucumbers are just struggling. I do have tomatoes and peppers that are coming along. So, you know, it's a hard time of the year in Florida. I've got a lot of porch vegetables going, peppers, different herbs, parsley, oregano, cilantro, different kinds of basil, and some tomatoes and peppers in pots. So those are doing good, but it's so hot and humid, mainly hot during the day, that it's really tough on plants this time of year. But the good news is that it's tropical fruit season, so I've been enjoying. It's my favorite time of year to be a Floridian. I love papayas. I have papaya and mango just about every day. Blueberries were just in season, so there's a lot of those around. Cherries are coming into season, pineapples. I had a patient bring me mangoes, and she also brought me a sapodilla. And if you haven't had one of those and you're someplace where you can get tropical fruits, I would encourage you to try it. According to, I have a book, it's called Florida Best Fruiting Plants, Native and Exotic Trees, Shrubs, and Vines by Charles Boning. It's a very good book if you live in Florida and you want to plant fruit trees. But anyway, he describes the sapodilla as a luscious pear stuffed with brown sugar and scented with jasmine. And I have to agree, it was really, really, it's my first time I'd had one, really, really good fruit. So I think it's something I want to plant a tree now of one of these and perhaps try to find places where I can get more of these. Apparently that the tree bears fruit more than one time of year, but it's kind of susceptible to cold weather. So but it grows here where I am in Southwest Florida and then further south. So that's always exciting. I have a black sapota tree in my yard, which has not fruited yet. And a black sapota is called the chocolate pudding fruit. And it produces this fruit about the size of an apple, and it's green, it's bright green when you initially grows and you pick it. And if you taste it when it's bright green, it really tastes like a bitter apple, and it's awful. You can't eat it. But as it ripens, it actually turns army green to brown. And inside this thin layer of skin is this black fruit that just looks like chocolate pudding and tastes like chocolate pudding. So I can't wait for my tree to grow those and to find somebody that has those so I can get some of those this summer as well. But that's a cool tropical fruit to get a hold of. There's a million different varieties, not a million, but there's a lot of different varieties of mango, so it's fun to try the different shapes and colors. And, you know, when I'm out running, I look at the mango trees. We say we have mango envy because we have three mangoes on our little tree. But yeah, there's different sizes and shapes and different fiber content. So try some if you have them at your local grocery store. I happen to like the oblong yellow ones. They're very low in fiber, very sweet. But I like them all. So I encourage you to try, my second breakfast. Typically I do a smoothie after I run with kale and fruit. And some flaxseed, but my second breakfast is usually more fruit and some walnuts. So it's been mango and black cherry with some walnuts and occasionally some a little bit of oatmeal in there. And I guess the last thing I'll bring up is a question that I've had recurrently about oils. Is olive oil healthy? There's a few studies out there that say people that, had oils, it was good for you. You need oil for your brain. You need cholesterol for your brain. Let's look at the simple facts. People that eat a low-fat diet in the countries of China's own people, Nigerians who have a high incidence of ApoE4, very low-fat, low incidence of dementia. Dr. Esselstyn's group that had an extremely low-fat diet, no Alzheimer's, and reverse their coronary artery disease. If we turn the tables around and we look at people that eat the standard American diet, high incidence of heart disease, high incidence of dementia, high incidence of cancer. So there's never been a study saying that, if we add oil to the standard American diet, it's going to make better. It's clearly made it worse, and it clearly adds a significant number of calories to your diet. It's a processed food. We know from the University of Maryland, when they've done studies on endothelial reactivity, the oils are absorbed immediately and cause vasoconstriction or constriction of the arteries. So there's nothing out there that says eating more fat is going to be beneficial. The question of, there's also a new diet out there, something about 30, the perfect 30 or the first 30. It was just a diet that was designed by some nutritionists for weight loss for celebrities, quick weight loss. It's another version of the low-carb paleo diet. They picked out certain vegetables and a very limited number of lean meats, and it eliminated dairy, which is great, eliminated sugar, which is great. And it's designed to do for 30 days and then to go back to the way you were eating before. So one, it's not super healthy. It's not nutrient densely packed. And two, it's merely a transition diet for people to lose weight and then to go back to eating the unhealthy ways that they were. So it doesn't make any sense. There's no scientific data behind it. There's no long-term studies behind it. There's, and the whole concept of it has been done over and over again. So, you know, it's another fad diet out there. So don't be sucked into, you know, a quick way of losing a few pounds but not getting healthy. It's not worth being lean and being unhealthy. I liken it to my grandfather had a Ford Galaxy 500, and he washed it, you know, religiously. It was spot shined. It was red. It looked pretty. He had over 100,000 miles. It was back up in Pennsylvania where, you know, the winters were rough, and it was before the time of coating the cars underneath. And finally, the car just rusted out from the inside, and basically the frame just fell away from the car. So that's what your body's like. You can look really good on the outside, you know, with plastic surgery and creams and lotions and get lean. But if you're not eating a nutrient-dense diet, then you're going to rust on the inside. And ultimately, the inside is what's going to keep you doing what you want and keep you happy and healthy. No one is, especially in the United States, is suffering from a lack of fat. Look around. Jack LaLanne said, pinch an inch. If you can pinch an inch, you have plenty of fat to make all the membranes that you need to. Your body is a very good factory for recycling parts, nitrogen, carbon, and oxygen to recycle it into things that it needs to be recycled into. You don't have to feed it excessive amounts of fat to have a big brain. That's not what we've seen in studies. It's actually people that are very healthy and lean that tend to have the best brain function over time. So please stay tuned to my website, drdulaney.com, drdulaney.com, for upcoming changes to the website, upcoming programs that we're going to start to offer. Even if you're far away, you'll be able to participate in some really good programs. You can reach me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com or jamie@drdulaney.com. Follow What I Eat on Instagram @jamiladulaney. I'm on Twitter @jamiladulaney as well. So I hope to speak with you next week. Until then, look to see that you're getting a nutrient-dense diet, lots of antioxidants. Chase each meal with fruit. It'll make you happy because you're getting something sweet, but it'll also give you a burst of antioxidants. So get out and move your body. Enjoy the summertime, and I'll see you next week.